not your fault. Maybe it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Yeah, Charlotte, how you doing? Doing okay? Everything going all right?
Everything's going fantastic. Fall's proceeding as planned. It's beautiful. The trees are turning orange up here in the Midwest.
Okay, we've got just a wonderful, this lady is top-notch. She's really a professional. She does excellent research, and she writes articles and testifies in trials. I want to introduce Ann Blake Tracy. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
I tell you what, Ann, you've written this book about Prozac and all these other antidepressants. And tell us a little bit about your background. And how you came to write this book, what motivated you?
Actually, what motivated me is something that a lot of people haven't even heard yet about antidepressants. I was living in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I think most people know that that's where Mormons are based, and they don't drink alcohol. Well, what I started noticing were all these people who had never touched alcohol in their lives becoming alcoholic almost overnight when prescribed Prozac. Then Zoloft came out. I saw the same thing with it. And then Paxil. And so that's the very first thing that I saw that made me really wake up. And I called a nurse at poison control and said, what happens when you mix alcohol with one of these antidepressants? And she said, it's the best way I know of to produce psychosis.
My gosh.
So I went down and got a package insert, and there it was. It said that there were reports of hypoglycemia and diabetes with the drug. And I went, geez, it's screwing up the pancreas and the blood sugar. And that, to me, has always been the worst thing anybody can ever have, because you can't think straight when your blood sugar is screwed up, because you immediately begin losing brain cells when the sugar level drops. So to me, that was huge, and I contacted AA thinking that they would care. I was wrong. So anyway, that's how I got started. Seeing that reaction, and the more that I saw, I just kept saying, somebody's got to do something about this.
Right.
So that's, I did.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Charlotte.
Yeah. And Charlotte here. Good evening to you.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, in your book, Prozac, Panacea or Pandora? Turning the 90s upside down. I have a copy of your updated 2001 edition. You open up with one of the mass shootings of the time, which was, if you could recall that part of your book for the audience, that would be fantastic. Because, it just seems like we're having mass shootings every time we turn around.
Oh, we've got them everywhere. We now have a database of almost 5,000 cases that we've posted online, and that documents what they were on, what happened. It's located at www.fsristories.net. and it's don't try.com or .org, it'll take you the wrong place. But if you try .net, you'll go to the right list of case after case after case. All the big cases you've heard in the news over the years. The Atlanta Day Trader, the New York City subway bombing, the Jewish school down in L.A. Those are all older ones, and I guess a lot of people don't remember those. Columbine, I'm sure they still remember. Red Lake, Virginia Tech, it just goes on and on and on and on. But the Westbecker case was the first one that they noticed. And that one happened in Louisville, Kentucky, where Joseph Westbecker took Prozac for 2 weeks, I think was all it was, and began having delusions that he was being sexually abused at work. So he went on a shooting spree at work, killed all these people, and then himself. And wounded a bunch of others. That case actually went to court. The survivors and the family members of those that didn't make it sued Eli Lilly for causing it. And apparently the case got settled in the middle, and the judge woke up and said, wait a minute, something doesn't smell right here. And he went in and found out that the case was settled. It wasn't that they were not guilty. They had paid off everybody, and so any evidence was no longer being presented to the court. And the judge said, wait a minute, this is a public safety issue. It needs to be addressed, and the public needs to know the truth. And he said, I'm not going to leave it here as a not guilty verdict until I know what's going on. And he spent the next 2 years digging up all the information to show that they had a secret settlement. So, scary when you go back and look.
There's so much money involved from the pharmaceutical side, billions, is there not?
Oh, yeah, there is. I think I went back and found out that how much did they spend? I think they spent $1 billion in the first 10 years Prozac was out settling cases and putting gag orders on them so that people didn't know what was going on.
My gosh. And these types of psychiatric. Oh, by the way, there is an introduction in your book by Peter R. Bragan, is there not?
Yes, there is.
And he's one of the preeminent psychiatrists. We've had him on the program also, as we've had you on before, but it's been a number of years. And we met up in Salt Lake City on one of those conferences one time also.
Right.
And I did. I wanted to say something, too, about Keith Ridgway. He's really been helpful, has he not, to you?
Yes, he has. And I do appreciate it.
Wow. Yeah, I just want to give him some credit for helping arrange this interview this evening. But also, Charlotte has been following you on Facebook, and I have to a certain degree myself. And, of course, we've certainly known the value of your deep research. So you not only looked at Prozac, you looked at a number of other drugs, did you not?
Oh, yeah. Prozac's just the mother drug. All the rest are just copycats. They're all similar drugs. They work the same way. That's why they're in the same class of drug. That's why the FDA, when they issued their warnings on the drugs, they said it was for any antidepressant they had ever approved in the past and any antidepressant they would approve in the future. They work the same way. Why the warnings go on every last one of them.
Right. The quantity of these drugs being sold today, is it two or three times what it was 10 or 15 years ago? Do you have any kind of statistics on the amount of sales on certain of these drugs?
No, I don't. I know it's just absolutely skyrocketed over the years, but especially after they finally gave them the right to advertise the drugs on television back in 97.
Right.
Interesting, it was 99, just 2 years after that, that I did the Lisa Gibbons show. And we did it on mothers on these drugs killing their children.
Okay.
And they told us as we walked on the stage, they said, you can use the word antidepressant, but you cannot say the brand names of the medications because of our advertisers.
Really?
So within 2 years, how much power they had.
Well, they have a system out there of what conditioning the MDs to prescribing the psychiatric, the psychiatrists especially, of prescribing these drugs as a panacea for everything. Is that, but the, what gets me is that some of the commercials today, the side effects part of the commercial is longer, as long or longer than the commercial. Have you noticed that? Huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, doesn't that tell us something?
It should. I love that commercial for urinary incontinence where they say, may cause sudden death.
May cause sudden death. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, what do I want? Wet underwear or do I want to pick out a coffin?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they'll just get you a top coat, you know, and put it in there, and it saves the, you know, the trousers, right? Oh, I'll tell you. You've got to laugh a little bit. It's gone so crazy, hasn't it not? So you got to try to find some levity here, or you can go stark raving mad about these things, right?
Oh, I know. I mean, you listen to those commercials, and you go, who would ever take these drugs? Why do they advertise them if nobody's going to take them, but apparently somebody does.
Well, I think a lot of people are bullied into taking them.
Oh, yeah, they are.
You know, I mean, truly.
Yeah, we're in the military now, according to Peter R. Bragan and Bart Billings, they are giving some of those drugs to our soldiers in combat.
Oh, they're almost insisting that they take them.
Yeah, and it's inducing. Here they are in combat under very heavy stresses survival, and then they've got their own these drugs that can induce psychotic fits. Is it a percentage of people that take this that results in these psychotic episodes, or do you have a percentage there or not?
Well, we know that 7 to 10% of the population actually lack the liver system they need to break the drugs down. So they're going to hit toxic levels faster than anybody else.
Oh, wow.
But over time, the drugs themselves shut that liver system down that's needed to metabolize them. So sooner or later, anybody, unless they're superhuman, is going to have a toxic reaction to these meds.
Now,
In
addition to this, Anne, you've got a problem here, a synergistic problem, it seems, like food and air and water and all these other things,
right.
and chemicals, even chemicals, are impacting that immune system, see? And then you've
That's
got
right.
the drugs get in there, and it really, synergistically, it even heightens the negative side, I would think.
That is correct. In fact, if you look at the older antidepressants like the MAO inhibitors, which really work the same way as an SSRI, which is a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, those drugs have warnings for using cheese with them. These drugs don't, and I believe that they should. And where were Eric and Dylan working when they shot up Columbine? They were working at a pizza parlor. So what were they having for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day? Like every kid that works at a pizza parlor. Did that have a synergistic effect upon them? We don't know. But it sure looks like it according to the science.
Right.
Because the disease will increase the level of serotonin. And that's where you get the toxicity, is the elevated serotonin. I know everybody's been told that they need to increase their serotonin levels with anything that they can find to increase it. That's the lie behind these drugs. Because according to the research, when you increase serotonin levels, you end up with a whole host of serious issues. Very serious issues, including suicide, hostility, mania, violent crime, argumentative behavior. It just goes on and on and on.
And they'll go into these episodes. Is there a rapid eye movement type of dynamic there in some of these episodes, or does that occur sometimes, or what? How does that factor into this? What about that?
Well, they do have what we call Prozac eyes, but
yeah,
that's where their eyes are wired.
Yeah,
and you saw it with the Colorado shooter, and everybody noticed that deer in the headlight look on his face.
Yes,
he had Prozac eyes. Adam Lanza had Prozac eyes, the big wide. In fact, we started calling it Prozac eyes clear back in the early 90s. And before we knew it, they were using the term in medical research.
Really?
Yeah. So it's pretty clear. It's very, very obvious. When you see it, you cannot miss it. And I warn people, if they ever see that, get out. Don't stick around.
Yeah, right. Just exit. Hit the nearest exit, huh? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was a case where a couple of guys broke into this man's house, and they were gonna rob the place. Well, the guy shot them both, and they put his picture up. And I'm trying to think what it was that was wrong with the case, but he was actually arrested for it. He may have shot him after they even stopped and he was holding them at gunpoint. I don't remember. But when they showed his picture, he had very, very obvious Prozac eyes.
Oh, my God.
So I sent a warning out to all robbers. Be careful. If you break into a place and see these eyes, run.
Right. Not wanted, like a not wanted. We don't want these kinds of looks on people's faces. But the suggestion, when you have a person, say, that's under the influence, okay, of these drugs, one or more of these drugs, then there's a lot going on in the news out here that can be very upsetting. Is it not? So, people can just go off on just a second or something, can't they? They get mad and it intensifies and then boom, they're out of control. Is that the way it works sometimes?
But they cannot control the adrenaline. Once it's released, it just pumps and pumps and pumps. Most of them will tell you they have no break for the adrenaline once it's triggered. And, it's either that's what causes the real reactive, angry, violent kinds of things. But then you also have cases like comedian Phil Hartman, or the only school shooter that we've had that has spoken out. And that's on our website at drugawareness.org. If you search for "Why I Took a Gun to School," you'll find that video of the only boy that talks about what actually happened to him. And he explains that he went to bed. They were switching him from Paxil to Effexor. that's a very bad time, is when you're going on or off the drug. When they're switching you, you're doing both. The FDA has warned that can cause suicide, hostility, or psychosis if you don't do it very slowly, very, very gradually. And so what happened to him is the last thing he remembered was going back to bed that morning because he didn't feel well and told his parents he would go later, that he needed to get some more rest because he just felt really sick. And he said he woke up in juvenile detention. Well, what he did for at least 45 minutes, we know, was hold a gun on his classmates at school. And one girl even asked him while he was standing there holding the gun on them. She said, "Corey, what are you going to do with that gun?" And he looked down at it in his hands like, "Oh my gosh, how did I get a gun?" And then he would put it under his own chin and hold it toward them again for a while. And he doesn't remember any of it even today. And this is what, how many years ago did that happen? It happened the year after Columbine. No. So it was a long time ago.
There's a fact,
but
yeah.
That's called a REM sleep behavior disorder. 86% of those being diagnosed with that sleep disorder where you're actually acting out a nightmare,
right,
86% are taking an antidepressant.
Okay.
And 80% of those going into that disorder hurt themselves or someone else. So that is really, really, really frightening.
Oh my gosh. Do you have some people there working? I'm hearing some noise in the background there. But anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's REM episodes, is that right?
That's what?
That's
REM.
Yeah.
REM episodes, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the factors in this is amnesia, is it not? It's very common. Then after an episode has occurred, a very violent episode or something, then they don't seem to remember their actions. Is that very common?
Yes, it is. And that's the way it was with this boy. He didn't remember. He said he woke up in juvenile detention.
Right.
And they had to tell him what he had done because he didn't know.
Oh, my gosh.
He had no idea how he'd gotten there, and finally somebody said, "Do you know why you're here?" And he said, "No."
Right.
You know, he'd never been in trouble before.
Right.
So that's just it. That's how you can cause these extreme out-of-character types of situations if they go into that sleep disorder.
Right. Go ahead, Joy.
Oh, I was going to say, in the past, you spoke about some sleep studies, perhaps it's in your book, where the sleep study didn't take into account that half their population was on, their tested population was on an antidepressant, a selective SSRI.
I don't recall that, but I know that they don't. They don't stop and think about that because so few even are aware of it. It should be headline news.
It should be headline news, what you're saying here.
Sure. I mean, if a doctor's going to give you a drug that could possibly have you act out a nightmare, wouldn't you want to know?
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
There again, it's those pharmaceuticals that are suppressing the news and news about these cases.
That's right. They are.
So now,
because it interferes with their sales.
Exactly. Their sales
with the money.
Yeah, there was a Paxil withdrawal crash over in Switzerland. I think you have it on your page. It was posted on the 5th.
Yes, I recently.
And boy,
what
happened on that? I mean, describe that case to us. What happened?
That one was the Paxil withdrawal case. the doctor had started withdrawing the patient, and they don't know that you cannot cut these drugs in half. You can't even cut them by a quarter. That's what had happened to comedian Phil Hartman's wife, as his doctor had just recently cut her dose in half. This sleep disorder that I just described to you, in the past, before these drugs, was known as a drug withdrawal state. Well, if that's the case, and 86% of those being diagnosed are taking an antidepressant, how high is it in the withdrawal from these drugs? But that's what this man was going into. And he, in fact, had forgotten to take his pill that day because, you know, they really affect your memory, like we just discussed. And so he rammed the bus he was driving into the side of a tunnel. And it killed 28 people on board. 22 of those were children.
My gosh.
And then you look at the German Wings pilot that had a mountain of antidepressants in his apartment and took a plane with 150 people down in a murder-suicide. Mm-hmm. So just in those two cases, you've got 178 deaths. And all we're talking about is guns?
Yeah.
Why aren't we banning buses and planes and anything else they're using to kill people with?
Right.
It makes no sense. It's caused by the drug. It's not caused by what they use to take a life.
Right. According to my studies and talking to some of the experts along, in addition to yourself, there seem to be a great number of suicides in the VA system, okay?
Because they push these drugs.
I know, and it seems to be that in the last year or so, they have quit releasing those statistics to the public. one authority in this area has said that he believes that there are more suicide deaths in the VA community than there are combat deaths.
Oh, yeah. They've documented that for a long time.
Is that pretty well substantiated then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since about
2009. I think in 2005, according to Peter R. Bragan and Bart Billings, that's when the Pentagon authorized these psychotropic psychiatry drugs to be administered to combat troops. So that fits right into this 2009 study or statistic, see, which would be if they started authorizing them at 2005, then by 2009 they had a history there, see, a VA history.
So I can tell you how hard they're pushing them.
Yeah.
I did the Geraldo show back in 1997 when they pulled Fen and Redux from the market.
Okay.
Those two were serotonergic drugs. Even though they were given for weight loss, they were serotonergic drugs. And anyway, when I did his show, I brought family on whose father had stabbed the wife and the two children and then shot himself on Zoloft. And so we tied it in on the show that this, too, was a serotonergic drug. And by the way, Fen-Phen and Redux got away with all the suicides they caused and all the murder suicides that they caused because nobody ever really knew that those drugs were pulled because of the brain damage they caused more than they were pulled because of the heart damage. But anyway, that was the basis of this show. And this family that came on and appeared were good friends of a friend of mine and her family. And that's how I knew about them. They were in Kansas, little tiny town in Kansas. And this is where this happened. And my friend had just read my book, called me and said,
Oh my gosh, we've just had one of your terrible cases here in our little town. It has to be this was the nicest man in town. And he just stabbed his whole family and then shot himself. So I contacted the family, and sure enough, and the wife understood it was caused by the Zoloft. In fact, when they went into the hospital, they were offered Prozac, and she told them to put it where the sun didn't shine, because she knew that that was what caused what just happened to their family. So now we come, what, 20 years later? The best friend of the boy that was stabbed goes into the Army. What does the Army tell him as he's going to Iraq? This is the kid's best friend who lived through this with him after his dad did all of this. He's told that if he's going to Iraq, he has to take an antidepressant or he won't be able to handle it. They pushed him so hard that he went to his dad, who's a social worker, and said, Dad, what do I do? They're telling me I have to take one of these drugs to go to Iraq. Luckily, his dad just said, look, you're going to be carrying a gun. You need your head together. You're not going to have your head together if you're on a mind-altering drug. And so he at least resisted then. But when he had some knee problems, they gave him, it may have been tramadol. I think it was tramadol, which is an SSRI that they use as a painkiller. And that led him to having sleep problems, for which they added another antidepressant and then another antidepressant, which caused him to have homicidal ideation. They even diagnosed it. And then they told him, if he had it again, they were going to arrest him. Wait a minute. They just given me three drugs.
My gosh.
That caused this. And they've told you that's what it is. And now they're telling you if you react to these drugs the way your body naturally would react to these drugs, they're going to arrest you for it.
Oh my gosh.
So anyway, that's how heavily they are actually pushing these drugs. Because this is a kid that really knew you don't ever want to take one of these, just from his own personal experience. And yet that's what happened to him, and he almost lost everything. They almost stripped him of everything that he had done in the service so far, and he'd been in for 6 years at least, I think. They were going to take all of his benefits.
My gosh.
Of course, I've had experts in this say that that's one reason why they're doing it, is to take their benefits. And in fact, there was a congressional hearing on it, that same thing, saying that they were actually getting troops to say that they did have psychiatric problems so that they could take the benefits. It's a mess. We've got really serious problems. Well, look at Robert Bales, the guy that went off and shot how many Afghanis in the middle of the night? Was it 18? I can't remember. It was a whole lot. He was on them. He and his wife both were taking them.
Yeah.
I don't know how bad it has to get before we realize these drugs are deadly. PCP was out there for 7 years. Look how long these have been out. But it was not the AMA that got PCP pulled from the market. It was judges and law enforcement that were sick and tired of dealing with all the violence. But where are judges and law enforcement now? They're all on these drugs. Not all of them, but enough of them that it's scary.
Yeah, it is. Frankly,
what percentage?
It is concerning.
What percentage of the people are on these drugs today? Do you have a handle on that?
You know, that is always really hard to find out.
Yeah.
I did an interview with Salt Lake City Magazine clear back in 92, and the reporter had to jump through hoops to find out anything then.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, even at that point, she found that 60% of state employees in Utah were taking an antidepressant in 92.
My gosh. And
so how bad could it be now?
Well, in the high schools, there must be a high percentage, too, to children that are acting out or whatever. And, well, Ritalin was used widely, I know. And
yeah, they started that in Northern California in the 1980s.
Did they?
This goes way back.
Yeah.
Don't you think, Ann?
Yeah.
Ritalin? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know the history of Ritalin. Back. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have kids ask me when I lecture at a school, they'll say, well, what about Ritalin? And I say, well, the chemical name is methylphenidate. So what is it? And they all holler, meth. I say, go home and tell your parents. They haven't figured that out yet.
Wow.
It's an amphetamine. Same family of drugs.
My God.
I've had pharmacists, when I've asked about other things, they'll say, what's with these parents putting their kids on Ritalin? Don't they realize that they're just turning them into drug addicts? That's all that they're going to be in the end, is a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But they don't. They're not told that. They don't explain that to them.
When I was growing up, when we were pretty hyperactive, being boys will be boys. Well, that we would go out and have a play period every afternoon for an hour, and they would wear us out, and then bring us back into the classroom, and we would settle down and study some more. See. The things that used to make sense, I don't think they're doing
that
anymore.
Now.
See what I mean? It's totally flip-flopped 180 degrees out, you know? What they should be doing, they're not. And what they are not doing, they're doing it, you know? I mean, they're creating the situations. And it seems like that this, when they identify some young boy that's really hyperactive or whatever, they want to, you know, reduce that down to some manageable level like they do the old people in the retirement home, see? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
And so they just drug them up and to maintain, you know?
That's the fit that looks at absolutely every population in this country as a market.
Yes.
And if you manipulate it the way that you're talking about, they know that they can get patients coming in begging for something to get through what they've caused with all of this insanity.
Mm.
Anybody knows you've got to work off adrenaline after a while, and exercise helps. Exercise is more effective than any antidepressant out there for depression.
Yeah.
Just doing that and studies. But, you know, who wants anybody to know that? Not if it's going to interfere with the bottom line. I've definitely learned that that's all that matters to these companies.
Well, a corporation doesn't have a soul, does it? See, it's soulless. It's an entity that has no real soul or feelings and so forth. So it's just, it's big machines that have been created that just plow over everybody, right?
Well, you would think that some of these people in charge of these corporations would have a soul, but pretty hard to see them. I mean, even the CEO of Eli Lilly lost his wife to a Prozac suicide in, what, 93, 94?
Yeah.
And they came out with the story that what was wrong was she'd only been on Prozac for 9 months, so she just hadn't started soon enough.
Oh, man.
That's horrible.
So obviously, somebody sold his soul or got a huge settlement for studying up about it.
It seems that we've entered a new cultural type of mode of gaming the system, you know, where The Cheating Culture was a book written many years ago, and it talked about how Americans had started cheating in many different levels in many different ways. Well, it seems to be now that instead of like in a marketing school or something, and when they get out of there or they go out into the industry, they're thinking up ways to create markets so that they can game the market. You know what I mean? It's not just to satisfy a legitimate market, it's to create new markets, see, intentionally, and then to satisfy those with additional products or whatever. What do you think?
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's evil. We're talking about an evil machine here.
Yeah.
Well, it's very human.
Yeah, and
result.
if it wasn't evil enough before, the drugs themselves caused people to do those kinds of things.
Right. Exactly. So they get, exactly. That's a good point. Then the people that are on the drugs start doing things that they normally wouldn't have done with morals and standards,
right?
So then that adds a great, synergistically adds a greater darkness or negativism to the whole culture and system. It's self-defeating.
And you start looking at mania.
Huh?
We start looking at mania, which these drugs produce so easily.
Yes.
There's so many different types. There's pyromania, where they start fires.
Right.
I mean, I've had kids starting fires like crazy. You have nymphomania, where they have all of these sexual compulsions.
Right.
And then you wonder why so many marriages are falling apart from infidelity.
Right.
You have dipsomania. Ever heard of that
one? Not sure.
That type of mania, there's about 100 types of mania. But that particular type of mania is overwhelming cravings for alcohol.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is the first thing that I saw with these drugs. I'd never heard of it before. I knew that's what I was seeing.
Well, that's what you experienced up in Salt Lake City area, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
I had one young mother that was drinking so heavily she had never, ever tasted alcohol in her life before Prozac. She said, I don't even know how I knew it was alcohol I was craving. But she was drinking so heavily that her husband had to stay home from work to take care of their two children, their two small children. And it was their church leader that I just happened to run into and mentioned that to him. And he said, oh, my gosh, I've got this poor woman. I've been trying to help, and I don't know what to do. And so he says, you think you can help her? And so I helped her to wean off of Prozac. All her problems with alcohol disappeared.
Now,
there were no more cravings.
Yeah, you were saying earlier about weaning people off of these drugs. You said you just can't go to half or anything. That's too severe a drop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you've got to really just take them off slowly. Is that the best treatment?
Yeah, you just shave granules off. You've got to come down super slow to avoid.
Yeah.
You want to avoid the withdrawal because, remember what I said about that REM sleep disorder?
Yes.
It is like you don't want to go into that because it is withdrawal. So you try to avoid as much of the withdrawal as you possibly can by going really, really, really slow.
Right, right. And
took us years to figure that out.
Right. So you're saying if they're brought down too quickly, they'll go into that REM disorder caused by non-sleep ability.
Right.
I got you. And then that thing can
or mania.
I got you.
It can cause you to go manic too. That's the manic psychosis they talk about that you can go into.
Okay. But it's all bad when you take them down too quick, right?
Right.
Now, many of the doctors,
really
are they
scary.
Very knowledgeable in these drugs to start with? I mean, they think that they work, right? Or
no.
What? They're not really well
no,
informed,
and
are they?
No, I had a Russian camera crew, Russian news crew come out in 2007 to do an interview, and they wanted to film me giving a lecture. So we set up a lecture, and I started lecturing, and afterwards, one of the women stood up afterwards and said, you know, what you're saying here is true, because I've been on Lexapro and I've had every one of those side effects. And she said, but you don't know what's going on out here. And I said, what do you mean? She said, 75% of the doctors and nurses I work with are on these drugs.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, oh, my gosh, with the way they affect memory, how do you remember what your patients need? She said, oh, we don't.
God.
You should have seen all the cameras.
Oh, my, I guess. God.
Yeah. That's dangerous.
We just keep reminding each other what the patient needs, and then we laugh and joke about how we're getting older. But she said what the drug reps were doing was they're coming in and talking to the doctors and saying, look, you're in a really stressful profession. You know that the depression is going to hit you sooner or later because of all of this stress. So you may as well get started on these drugs now. And I said, you mean to tell me they fell for the fat old sales line? And she said, I guess so.
So they're
so that's what they're doing with doctors to get some, you know, that 60% of workplace violence shootings happen in medical facilities.
Really?
Yeah. Where else? Where do you get the drugs?
My gosh. Well, they've always had, you know,
you'd think,
go ahead.
I mean, what, can't people do simple math?
Yeah.
It's so obvious when you look at these things and add them up. But they just don't.
It's tragic.
Well, now, in your work over the years, have you run into some people that have been very good, positive colleagues over the years? I guess Bragan, Peter V.R. Bragan, has been helpful. And have there been others that have been like other colleagues in this quest to try to?
A few. Yeah. Dr. Joseph Glenn Mullen back at Harvard has been very, very helpful. He testifies in a lot of the trials. Excuse me. And then, and there's others that aren't near as well known that have spoken out.
Are there,
and they're doing their best to raise awareness. But when you're going against the billions upon billions of dollars that these drug companies are making, it's pretty hard.
Right.
It's really pretty hard to get anybody to pay a whole lot of attention. And, of course, you're not going to hear it on the media.
Right.
Because
they
don't want to lose their advertising dollars.
Right, right.
And they put gag orders. Is that right, Ann?
Oh, yeah.
And they gag order the people
the
that are given.
And the cases. The best break we had was that case in Wyoming, the Paxil case, where the poor man had taken only two doses of Paxil, got up the next morning after the second dose, shot his wife, daughter, infant, granddaughter, and then himself. That case, the drug company was stupid enough to let go to court. Of course, I was jumping up and down for joy.
Yeah.
Because I thought, wonderful. There's not going to be a gag order here. So, sure enough, we won the case, and people need to hear what these guys testify to under oath. You know, what you're hearing on TV in an ad is not what they're going to testify to under oath. And when you get that information,
to get ready for an oxygen tank.
You know, another thing I've noticed too, mm-hmm. in the law briefing business, where there are law books and cases that are reported and published, well, probably some of those things are edited out and never published like they should be, probably. I can't say for sure I know that, but my feelings would be that. See what I mean?
Yeah.
I would feel that they have the power and the money,
yeah,
to not allow some of the real insightful cases, just like you cited, to be ever published widely, right?
Oh, well, yeah, because who's going to publish them widely? A newspaper,
yeah,
or...
But what I'm saying, they'll never wind up in the book reference, law book reference section. See what I mean? As a case. You see what I'm saying? To where an attorney
yeah,
later on could refer back to this case and read a lot. You know,
yeah, I don't think they worry about that a whole lot, because unless you know which case to look at and where to find it, the attorneys aren't going to go back and search that out. There's too many cases.
Right, right.
I mean, if they want to call me, I'll give
them. Right, you know those cases. Boy, I tell you.
I know those cases.
Yeah.
I know which ones we've won. I know how that they've been won.
Right.
And that's what people need to know. They need to understand the science behind what increasing serotonin in the brain does. When you know that, you can win these cases easily.
And what you're saying is that some of the...
What's really scary, though, is they're bringing in a lot of their people to testify in these cases as experts. The prosecutors are bringing them in. Look at Andrea Yates' case, her second case, where they tried to put her away.
Right.
What happened with her is, you know, that they paid $10,000 to defend her, and only one of the experts against her was paid $250,000.
Oh,
it's unheard of. I mean, I've been testifying in these cases since 92. Nobody's ever heard of that. I watched that report with an attorney in Houston, because we were down there for the case and had a big press conference and met with Rusty, her husband. And we stood there watching the news where they said that that's how much you got paid. And we both looked at one another and said, oh, my gosh, where did they get that kind of money? And in unison, we both said, the drug company.
Right. My gosh.
So those are some of the things that really need to be looked at.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's we're down to about 5 or 6 minutes now. Do you have some things that you would like to talk about or bring up that we've skipped over or I've forgotten to ask you or whatever? Do you have some things you'd like to add?
Oh, there's probably plenty that I would like to add, but there's too much. So why don't I give you the website that's going to have most of that information on it, so people know where to go to get more information.
Okay.
And that's drugawareness.org. Drugawareness.org.
Okay.
And if you go on there, you can watch a video of the kid talking about taking a gun to school.
Okay.
You can read about how Prozac was actually bribed, the approval was bribed, and the doctor who did it is speaking out. That's how they got these drugs on the market. There's just tons of information on there. And once you read through all of that information, you'll see what's being presented in these courtrooms. You'll know what's going on with these drugs. And there won't be any question left.
Right.
So drugawareness.org, and if you want the list of all the school shooters and the mass violence cases, join the documentation of which antidepressant they were on, That is at www.sfristories.net.
Yes. Yeah, we have that up too also. We have all of these sites that you're saying up already this evening. And
Well, those are the most important things. And what people need to know more than anything else is, as bad as it is with all of these terrible shootings and things, the worst with antidepressants is the number of families that are being destroyed.
Yes.
Marriages that are like 40 years that are just going away almost overnight once these drugs are prescribed.
Yeah.
And the families falling apart, to me, is even worse than what we're seeing with all of these terrible murders and suicides.
Right.
It's just a shame. It's destroying this country.
You say here, a group of physicians, researchers, journalists, and concerned citizens dedicated to educating about the dangers posed by many RX medicines, and that, of course, does include, of course, your SSRI.
Right.
You know,
yeah. And I should mention, you asked about people, doctors that have come in to help. Of course, the biggest support has been Dr. Candace Kurtz.
Yes, yes.
And Dr. Kurtz headed the...
Yes.
She headed the at NIH, the brain chemistry department, the neural psych department there for 13 years. And it was her discovery that made all these drugs possible. And she came out in 97, right after I did that Geraldo show, and in Time magazine called these drugs monsters, that she was alarmed she ever had anything to do with their development. And she has been the best supporter all along.
Well, with all of us. And
in fact, I worked with her trying to save her own sister's life from these drugs.
Right. She's a good lady. Fine person.
Like I say, everybody's been affected.
Yes, they have. Charlotte, do you have anything to ask or inject into these final 2 minutes here?
No, I just wanted to thank Ann Blake Tracy for joining us. I mean, it's always a pleasure. I learn something new every time I listen to you, Ann, and you're so passionate and heartfelt about, you know, what you know and the hard work you've, you know, put in over the years. You're my hero.
You're the bestest is my – Charlotte knows what that means, don't you, Charlotte? When I tell people they're the bestest, that means the top, past being tops. Okay, you're over the top, okay?
Tops, yeah.
You're a fine person, Ann Blake Tracy, and we certainly appreciate everything you've done in this area.
Because I know you've suffered as well, so everybody has suffered in this journey.
Yeah, so. Not really nice to you when you try to tell the truth publicly.
Right. You know, it's a pretty cruel world sometimes, but we certainly do.
Yeah, and I would also encourage everyone to go to our website and search for Mark Kaler's fight for Columbine. Mark was the first one who shot at Columbine, and what they have done to him for speaking out is beyond description.
Okay.
Most criminal thing ever.
Well, that's about it for the program, and we certainly appreciate ending on a note there of giving someone some credit that where credit is due. That for sure. We'll make a special note on our program site of his name and so forth, and where people can go to appreciate him. But thank you very much for this interview, and we certainly do thank you very much, Ann Blake Tracy.
Okay. Just tell your listeners to wake up before these drugs come through their back door and do what they
do. Right, exactly. Well, thank you very much.
Bye.
Good night.